Jeff here. Thanks for listening. Go to playvolutionhq.com/ccbag or click the link in the show notes for the show's archives, ways to connect, ways to support the show, information about happy hour, and more. I'm Jeff Johnson, coming to you from upstairs studio in the snuggery along the Gulf of Mexico. With me, we got Seth, quote unquote, Sally is with us from the great state of Texas. How you doing, Sally?
I'm doing good tonight, Jeff. I am excited to talk all things ECE.
So Sally showed up when we had the voicemail line going a while ago, and then she showed up at some of the bar and grill happy hours, and she worried she talked too much, and I assured her she didn't, and to expand on my claim, I told her we needed to record together so she wouldn't feel like she talked too much, because it would just be the two of us, and I've got no problem shutting up every once in a while and listening. Some people we'll have a hard time believing that, but it's true. So we're going to, she picked the topic. So if you don't like the topic of this episode, it's Sally's fault. But before we get into that, I've had an interesting email exchange today. So I don't know if I should use her name because she hasn't, I didn't ask. So I'm not going to, but a friend of the show, she's been on the show before, going to be on the show again. Homeschooling parent, has a son who, when hears mom playing the childcare bar and grill podcast, he hears the music and hears me, and he does some version of Jeff. I'm like, well, what's this kid doing listening to this podcast? But you know, mom listens, and now it turns out the email says, 9-year-old has shaped his entire learning map for this semester around the Childcare Bar and Grill podcast. And he's perfecting his own rendition of Jeff as his final project. So
that is so awesome.
I don't know what the hell that means, but I'm feeling very excited about it. I can't wait to learn more. So Vincent, if you're listening to this episode, Vincent, how you doing, Vincent? You have a good day, and listen to your mom, and really stop listening to this podcast. You shouldn't be listening to this podcast. So Sally, what are we talking about?
You know, I gotta kind of roll off of what you just said. I just started homeschooling my youngest, and yeah, right. That's going to kind of play into what we're talking about today. But I do occasionally listen to the Childcare Bar and Grill on my way home. And he's hilarious because he'll pause it every 5 seconds and go, well, does this mean? And he'll expand further on the idea. And we just have this great conversation. I'm just sitting here going, all right, Vincent, good job. I'm really hoping that this mom posts a little bit on my Playhaven about exactly what he prepared for himself as his choice of learning. So that's pretty exciting.
Yours is Vincent too?
No. I'm
Oh, no. Okay. that would really freak me out. Maybe we should get the two of them together and they could work on a dissertation about the podcast or something. That would be awesome. So there was too much you decided you wanted to helicopter parent more and decided to homeschool? Is that what we're talking about? What happened?
The exact opposite. So my son was recently in a charter school that was very tight button, very classical, let's put it like that. And, you know, you see those moms in the car line with the intentional yoga pants and the latte and the high mom messy bun situation.
What kind of yoga pants?
The intentional yoga pants, you know, the designer yoga pants. I took time to look like a hot mess mom, even though I'm absolutely not.
Oh.
Every mother who's listening to this knows exactly who I'm talking about. And they're very, they're wiping their 11-year-old's noses. They are, they pack their kids' backpack every morning. They make sure that, they sit there and they do their kids' homework for them. That's the kind of helicopter parenting that one drives me absolutely insane, because you are literally doing the exact opposite of what your children need to succeed as adults, to succeed as humans. And I've always been very autonomy focused, very let them establish their independence, let them learn how to do things on their own. But that old teacher brain in me, where when I first started in the education field, my understanding of a teacher was worksheets and calendar time and circle time, and everybody has a space on the carpet, crisscross applesauce, and all that BS. That was where I began in my educational journey. So that part of me sometimes still gets a little hair trigger when my kids are, expanding, trying something new, and I just realized I went, oh shit, I'm doing this wrong. Back up, let them learn, let them dive in, let them explore. And so it was just something playing in my head the other day when I was watching one of those intentional yoga pant moms, going, well, at least I'm not that bad. But when we're looking at early learning programs and programs that we tend to, on this podcast, you tend to uphold in such high esteem, these programs that truly dive into play, child-led learning, all of those wonderful, intricate things that happen in those programs. And then you look at your standard corporate early learning program, and it's calendar time, and it's, 15-minute block schedules throughout the day. Another program I worked for at a time. And how do we take these intentional yoga moms who may not even realize that that's what they're doing, and kind of break the mold and let their children explore? How do we, as educators, and I know I've had this conversation many times with parents, and here I get on my soapbox, so I'm going to step back down here in a second. This is the Sally talks too much. How do we get them out of that mindset that they cannot handle lack of control, that they cannot allow their children to make the decisions that are actually going to influence their learning?
So, is this becoming a generational problem? Are some of these young parents helicoptering because they were helicoptered and that's the only thing they know? A great book, if you're interested in this topic, listeners, is Nation of Wimps. Oh, I think it came out in maybe the 90s or early 2000s or something. It's a fairly old book, but it's a great read. And in there, I mean, the author talks about parents going, parents calling parents with children in college calling professors about things going on in class and homework and that kind of thing. And so then this book has been around for 10 years plus. And then just a couple of weeks ago, I saw an article online about parents showing up at job interviews with their college graduate children. So it does seem to be kind of a thing. And I mean, for me, part of it is, well, I'm glad the parents give a fuck. I mean, that's nice to see, because I mean, seriously, because at the other end of the spectrum, there are way too many young human children out there who don't have an adult in the world who is committed to their well-being much more than survival level. And that's kind of a sad thing to see too. So I guess what we're looking for is someplace in the middle, in the middle.
Yes, when you say that, I'm literally picturing parents' faces that I've encountered in my career, and That's that mom. That's that mom. And I've seen so many different things shift over the last 5 years. We all know what happened over the last 5 years and how that shift kind of began, and the hope that there was going to be some form of bounce back from that, that we were going to just kind of slip back into, it went one of two ways. Either the children went batshit crazy and took over the household, and mom shut down because she couldn't cope, or dad shut down because he couldn't cope, or we had the I must control every movement. I must make sure that every single thing is rigid and on time and done to maintain that sanity at the same time. And then we put all these kids back together after being in these vastly different environments. And from what I've seen, what I've observed is a very, okay, now it's yours again. And it's a complete detachment from being a part of the process, being a building that partnership with the early childhood caregiver. When I listen to your podcast, one of the things that always jumps into my mind
Oh,
first
hey,
is,
wait. You're on the show now. It's our podcast. You're on the show now. It's our podcast.
Okay, I'm gonna calm down. Yes. So on our podcast, best moment ever. Anyway, one of the things that first pops into my mind is how many early childhood educators, how many caregivers are listening to this podcast for the first time. And they're trying to dip their toe in the water. They're trying to explore the idea that all of the research shows that children actually learn better differently than what they've been taught their entire educational careers. So when I think about that, and I think about how we talk and how we have discussions about early childhood, every part of me wants to make sure that I'm inclusive of that teacher that's standing on the edge of the cliff. Am I going to die? That teacher that's peeking out her curtain, is this something I want to explore? So developing that relationship between the parent and the caregiver and the child, and how important all of that is, especially given today's cultural environment, if you will. I just think that there needs to be a very, very part of me wants to say delicate, the other part of me wants to say landmine bridge built that just kind of starts the conversation.
What's that look like?
I don't know. I've had both of those. I've had the, let's talk about what's going on with your student today. This is the kind of things I was seeing in the classroom, and I really noticed that this child was so interested in this thing. Have you guys done stuff like that at home? Because I think that he brought it to school with him, and I really enjoyed it, and I just wanted to get your feedback. And then I've had the conversation where it was super awesome that your child did this thing today. Here's some things that you might want to try at home. Or I have a couple of toys that he really enjoyed, mostly loose parts, typically when I have this conversation. Take him home, see how he does with it. He might stick it up his nose. It's cool. That's what tweezers are for. Second
Sure.
use.
I mean, if you're gonna stick something up your nose, tweezers are great too.
No, please not. My oldest was that kid who tried to stick the fork into the electrical socket.
How many times?
Well, you so well what happened was he may have tried more than once. And now he's a teenager, and I pray every day that we make it through this alive. So there you go.
Oh, I can't wait to hear more about this child. Well, at least he's tenacious. I like some tenaciousness in youngins. So the helicoptering is not only going on at home, it's going on so much in the classrooms as well that kids don't get a break. I mean, when I was in elementary school, at recess, there'd be a couple hundred kids out on the playground. And this is the mid to late 70s. A couple hundred kids out on the playground, one adult standing there in on the corner of the playground smoking. So we at least had a little bit of freedom at school if we were getting helicoptered away from school. Maybe not all day at school, but at least there were pockets of it. But some kids are helicoptered from the moment they wake up in the morning to the moment they fall asleep. And that is really restrictive. And I'm awed that more kids don't rebel against that. Maybe they do. Maybe I just don't hear about it or see it. But it seems like a lot of kids just get comfortable with that because that's the way it is and don't push for more freedom and more control and more power in their little lives. It's just the way it's always been. And so they don't know that there's an alternative or what is it?
Well, I mean, it sounds like, one, you created the recipe for toxic stress. I mean, if you're spending your entire life being manipulated by other people and being controlled by other people, what recourse do you have? Fight, flight, or freeze? What's going to happen? And when I was working specifically in special education, that was when they called me in. I was behavior intervention specialist, and which we can dive into that another time. But one of the things I often noticed when I went to work with these specific children is it was 100% that that's exactly what was happening. Every single moment of every single day was being mitigated and controlled and pushed on them. And they were like, well, no, that's not how I do things. So I'm going to need you to figure out my world and live in my space. And teachers who, of course, need that utmost control. And this is, of course, not of course, I keep saying of course, like everybody knows what's in my brain. Working in the school district, we already see how absolutely overbearing it's become. And now they're bleeding it into our pre-K programs and it's our preschool programs. It's becoming a pandemic in and of itself. And there were so many times when that was exactly it. This is why these kids were, you know, throwing chairs and running out of the classroom, running out of the building, you know, stomping on their teacher's foot. You told me to do this again? Are you serious, lady? I don't care if it's a blue triangle and a red square on the calendar. That gives zero F's to my life. And so I've seen it. I've seen it actually happen and play out, and it's terrifying. And because you've now created a human who has the inability to process natural given emotion. Like it's, they're burnt out and they're not even five.
Okay, this is the point in the show where we take a quick left turn, unexpected. So I've been noticing over the last couple months, maybe it's been going, it's I'm sure been going along longer, maybe, but it hasn't bumped into me. When talking about behavior with caregivers, I'm hearing more and more stories of kids. I mean, there's the normal behavior problems. There's toddlers that bite. And when I say behavior and problems, both of those are in scare quotes. There are toddlers that bite, and there are preschoolers that have hard time taking turns or using a little bit of self-restraint and not hitting when they're trying to get their shovel back and all that kind of stuff. That's normal kid stuff. But what I'm hearing more and more of in these conversations is caregivers dealing with kids that, I mean, broken children and children in distress are the only two terms I've been able to figure out to describe them. Constantly, or I mean, not constantly, but regularly, like on the daily, flipping tables and being violent with staff and children and everything like this, all this pent up anger and aggression that I don't, I mean, I spent 26 years as a direct caregiver, and I don't remember more than maybe a handful of kids in all that time that exhibited those kinds of behaviors. And now I hear from programs that have multiple kids that are in that kind of distress on a daily basis. And I don't know, is it something you're seeing more? Is it, or am I just hearing about it
It's
for whatever
alarming.
reason?
It's alarming. So I've been in this industry for 25 years, and what I saw in the beginning to what I see now is astronomical. And that's one of the reasons that the helicopter parenting idea kind of stuck to my brain was why. I need a why. Why is this happening? Why is this becoming so aggressive so quickly? And they talk about all the statistics with increase in diagnoses, which I have my own opinions about that, but we're seeing all this quick to fire response. As I've gone into programs and coached, as I've gone into programs and mentored, as I've gone into classrooms and helped develop strategies for interacting with the children who are going through these kinds of upset is very, very much the bureaucratic agenda that I see driving this. It is the you must sit, you must complete this worksheet, you will lose your 15-minute recess. And it's when I say alarming, when I say shocking and overwhelming, I left the school district 8 years ago. And then it was crazy. I have permanent nerve damage from a 9-year-old who flipped a table and slammed me into the wall. He was a pencil. This kid was tiny, but he was so full of anger and rage and burnout and toxic stress that he injured a 6-foot-tall woman. I mean, it is alarming. It's very concerning. And I feel like one of the reasons why conversations like this need to keep happening and knowledge needs to keep spreading in any way it can is so that we can save the children from. And the horrible part about this is a horrible thing to really digest and think about. Every single one of these caregivers genuinely thinks that they're doing the right thing.
Sure.
It's that lack of understanding and education. It's that lack of knowledge of actual child development and what is typical behavior. And what is appropriate behavior for their age, developmental age, and the genuine lack of understanding and the constant beat down of expectations that's driving this.
Well, yeah. And the stories I've been hearing about these children from are coming from programs that are working really, really hard to be play focused. And I'm hearing them from caregivers that I've got a lot of respect for and know to be play oriented. And still, this kind of behavior is going on in their classrooms. And that's what I struggle with because I'm of the mind, well, you give the kids a little bit of respect and some love and respect, and you make sure they sleep and eat when they need to, so their lower level Maslow needs are being met. And then you create an environment where they've got some power and control, and everything's are gonna flow. And for most kids, most of the time, that's the case in my experience. But I don't know how to handle or address these. I don't know, tragically aggressive kid. I don't even know how to describe it.
And you're right, we are seeing it. It's widespread. It's permeated every early learning environment now, where it's not just something you see in those overrigid environments. While that is what I'm pointing to the most because it's most common in those
Sure, and
environments.
probably worse. I mean,
Yes.
the fallout is probably worse in those kinds of environments. Because there's less chance, less understanding of child development. So it's not, I mean, my first thought over the last couple of months has been, well, is this is this pandemic fallout stuff? But you were seeing it going on before that?
Not to this degree, nowhere near it. I do genuinely feel that the pandemic has significantly increased this.
Well, let's time out. Jeff's got to do his, not the pandemic, the response of quote unquote experts to the pandemic. That's what we're talking about. The pandemic didn't fuck people up.
Thank you so much for saying
people
it.
Up. People made decisions that fucked people up. So there's that little bit of disclaimer or clarification, but yeah, for shorthand, we can call it the pandemic, but it's experts and educrats and bureaucrats that created a lot of the problems we're seeing in young children and families today, years after the pandemic.
Years,
that,
years.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm sorry for the interruption.
Oh, no, no. I am so glad you took that moment because I was kind of delicately stepping around that particular word for my own views on it. And you couldn't have said it better. You could not have said it better.
Well,
I
that's
do
what I'm
very
known
much
for, is saying things perfectly while I'm drinking whiskey. So there's that. So it was happening before. It got intensified during that period. Is it, I mean, what's do we know what's causing it? You're kind of in this field, that corner of the field, more than I am. Are you? I mean,
I don't know. I have some very interesting views on what may be causing the increase in these kinds of behaviors. When we look at the rate, statistically speaking, all the researchers want to say that, let's just say autism. When I first entered the field, it was barely even recognized as anything. And then when I started working in special education, it was 1 in 40. When I got to my second school district, it was 1 in 11. It's now said it's 1 in 6. However, that spectrum keeps getting broader, right? They now include ADD, ADHD, OCD. They include all of those under the spectrum now. They've completely rebranded. And that's such a horrible thing to say. They rebranded.
And not to be cynical, when you have a diagnosis, the district gets more funding, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it is good for kids to be diagnosed with things because then the school district or the program gets more money. But that couldn't be
based on their
apart.
Matrix level.
Sure.
If you want the technical term for it, it's based on their Matrix level, exactly how much more funding they get.
So are we intentionally breaking children so school districts can have more money? That sounds very pessimistic and cynical, but and probably isn't the case, but I'm always looking for a good conspiracy.
When I say go down certain rabbit holes and get on soapboxes for particular conversations, this is one of them. This is one where we have a 3-hour-long podcast. I do very much believe that there is a bureaucratic tool at play in all of this. I also feel as though society has ripped apart the expectations of behaviors to a point where, whether it's not happening in the early learning program, if this is happening, if they're staring at a screen the second they leave that program, if mom's staring at a screen the second they leave that program, if we get home, mom's stressed, because we do not live in a world any longer where it is common for it to be a one parent working household with two parents there. You know, it's not common anymore. Most households, both parents have to work just to survive. just to make ends meet, just to keep a roof over their heads. So they're coming home with all of that added stress. They're coming home with they didn't have any off button time. They're coming home with their own burnout, their own, and they don't have the space anymore to snuggle up and cuddle and read and talk about. So we're seeing a drive towards programs that are appropriate for children that are play driven. There is a part of me, and what I've observed, and I definitely want to do further research on this, but there is a part of me that wonders if, if this is the case, if this is a reason, fine, keep doing it because it's what children need, but that these parents are making these choices out of a more guilt-driven base, that they are so tired, they are so done by the time that they get home. Let me find a program that's going to give my child what I know they actually need because I'm not.
Sure.
Just something I've been tossing around.
Sure. If, and I mean, but those kind of programs are kind of few and far between and hard to find as well. I don't know. And I mean, you mentioned society was, what did you say, unraveling. And it really kind of feels that way. And look, I recorded with Lisa Murphy the other day, and we were talking about, I was having fond memories of the Sears catalog in the 1970s, because there was a particular model there that I had a real crush on, and then a few years later, I found myself a hot blonde that decided to put up with me for a couple, two, three decades so far. And so I'm wired for that olden times. But that I mean, life wasn't perfect then either. And I think in the cohort of kids I went through elementary school with, there were three kids that were living in single parent families. And I mean, look, there's so much research that says so many different things, but seems to be a solid base of research that says kids in two parent families, or kids with two active parents, maybe even, I mean, the parents might be divorced, but if the both parents are active in the child's life, those kids are going to have fewer problems of the sort we're talking about than kids that are in single parent families. Am I wrong on that? But that seems to be what I'm reading
That
and hearing.
seems to be what I'm seeing too, but I do want to take a moment and say here, I know I am no poster parent. I am far from it. I struggle. I mess up all the time. As a matter of fact, while my youngest is now being homeschooled, my husband's the one that's doing it because he has that flexibility with his employment that I just don't have. And my child in a public school setting, in a charter school setting, he wasn't throwing chairs or tables or anything of that nature, but he was having consistent meltdowns, consistent, because the rigidness that has happened to the school system is so unbelievable that he was done. He couldn't tolerate it. He couldn't handle it. So when we're looking at, does active parenting play a role? When we're looking at what is causing this significant increase, I mean, I have my theories. Nutrition is a big one. Outdoor experience is another big one. But there's just so many things that are going on and they're happening that's really has me wondering, if I could just step back a little bit further and see the whole picture, I feel like I would have a much better grasp and plan of attack, I guess I should say.
So I mean, more bacon and tree climbing. That's your
Yes.
solution? Bacon.
Less
And
dye and processed foods and just everything now is just pumped full of crap. By the
except
way,
for the bacon.
yes. Before this episode is over, like as we're wrapping up, I really need you to tell me about that pulled pork that you smoked. I've been thinking about it since you mentioned it in episodes ago. 16
Oh,
hours pulled
well,
pork situation.
we can. Oh, I've extended the time. We can talk pulled pork. And first, I want to go that the research I'm touching the two parent versus single parent household things. That's research I've seen. I don't know if it's true. I know there are a lot of single parents out there that are kicking ass doing it, and I know from personal experience there are two parent families that should have got divorced a long time ago. It would have been better for everybody involved. So, I mean,
I'm sorry.
I don't know what the answer is. What? Yeah, I was looking at Tasha. Her parents should have got divorced long, long time ago.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. I was like, you talk about how much she is like the moon of your life. What happened there?
Well, no. I mean, look, she lucked out when she got me. Anyway, the best thing her parents ever did together was conceive her. That's what that is. But it is about time to wrap this up. So let's talk pulled pork. So not smoked. I'm just slow roasting in the oven, my pulled pork, and so you put a dry rub on it, right? And that can be whatever you want, but you put that dry rub on it, and then you slow roast it. I've been you know, the last one I did was about 220 degrees for about 24 hours, and then it builds this, they call it a bark on the outside. It gets all nice and crusty, and then you take it out of the oven and you wrap it in aluminum foil, and then you wrap it in towels, and you let it sit for another couple hours. And then it just falls apart. I was kind of sad because co-host Brett mentioned these cool bear claw things for pulling pork, and I got those, but it's you barely need them. It just falls apart, and it's yummy and delicious. Tasha likes to mix in some barbecue sauce there. I go with a little bit of salt and pepper. It's just delightful. So look, we covered the childcare bar and grill as homeschool curriculum. We covered some helicopter parenting. We talked about broken children. We talked about pulled pork. Anything else we should touch on before we wrap it up?
I just want to say, head over to my play haven. It's a pretty awesome site. There's a lot of good stuff going on over there.
It's kind of quiet, but there's some stuff going on there once in a while. I actually posted this morning. I'm looking for feedback about the intensity of behavior problems, the broken children thing. I'm trying to find out more because I mean, I'm not with kids on a daily basis the way so many other people are. So I think that's going to be an ongoing topic. One final thing. Would you rather, this comes from Brett, would you rather be covered in feathers or be covered in scales?
Scales.
Okay. Neither listener Debbie asked on at Playhaven if you got any, you don't get to, if you have feathers, you don't get to fly. If you have scales, you can't eat bugs with your tongue or swim underwater,
But
breathe
can you
underwater.
slither?
You could, well, I mean, you can
I mean,
slither
you gotta
without.
be slicker on the grass, at least.
You
Just
can
like.
slither without scales, but yes, as I think scales would be better at slithering because I mean better than feathers if you wanted to slither. Why do you want to slither? What's
I
the
don't know. I like camping, and so I feel like it would be just a really interesting way to go on a hike, just slither down the trail.
slithering along?
I mean, it's a lot of calories burned, I can guarantee you that, because this does not slither currently, so maybe scales would help.
Maybe that's what those yoga pant moms are up to. This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast, the world's longest running and most prolific early learning podcast. That's happy you let us slither into your ear holes. Back soon. Thanks for listening. Bye bye.
Bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.